Good morning. Wasn't that interesting? It's really fascinating to see how Catherine and her team are helping farmers in Nigeria to work with God to produce a better harvest. And clearly an important part of this work is helping them to adapt to climate change. As this is our first Climate Sunday service at Sheldon Road, I think we should start with a basic question. Why should we, as Christians, care about climate change? The first answer, I hope, is an obvious one. God's creation is being seriously damaged by climate change, and we, the human race, are responsible for causing the global warming that's leading to climate change. We heard from Psalm 8, which Eva read so beautifully to us just now, that God has entrusted us to be rulers over the works of his hands. But he intended us to take care of his creation and all its resources, not to strip it, disrupt its delicately balanced ecosystems, and leave the land unable to produce crops. And although God has entrusted us to look after this world, it's not ours to own. Psalm 24 tells us that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. So tackling climate change is a matter of responsibility. But it's also a matter of justice. It's a matter of justice because it's the people who have contributed least to climate change who are suffering its effects the most and will suffer its effects the most in the future. The Solomon Islanders, for example, have seen beaches disappear, houses destroyed, and even whole islands being completely submerged as sea levels rise. And yet, they produce less than 0.01% of emissions. As we know from Isaiah chapter 30 and numerous other places in the Bible, the Lord is a God of justice. As his children, he wants us to act justly and to love mercy. So, tackling climate change is a matter of responsibility and justice. But it's also a matter of love. What sort of world do we want to leave to those we love, our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren? And of course, Jesus calls us to love not just those near to us, but to love our neighbours too. We may not have been affected directly by climate change ourselves yet, but what about our neighbours in other parts of the country who have suffered serious flooding? Our neighbours around the world who have experienced devastating storms and forest fires? Indeed, what about Catherine's farmers in Nigeria, where growing crops was already difficult? What does their future hold as the temperatures continue to rise? When I came to Chippenham over 30 years ago to take up a teaching post, the local schools were about to hold an environment day. My class had to produce board games that would highlight environmental issues. So I had to learn about these issues myself. And this was a really helpful book, the Blue Peter Green Book. It covered all sorts of environmental concerns, some of which were very pressing at the time. Acid rain was polluting rivers, lakes and soil, and destroying woods, forests and historic buildings. 2/3 of cars still ran on leaded petrol, which had been shown to affect people's brains, and especially the brains of children. And most scary of all was the hole in the ozone layer. The gases used in aerosol cans, especially CFCs, were destroying the layer of the atmosphere that protects us from the harmful rays of the sun. A more distant threat at that time was something called the greenhouse effect. As we pumped more and more gases, such as carbon dioxide, into the atmosphere, these gases were forming a layer that was acting like a blanket around the Earth, trapping the heat of the sun and causing temperatures on the planet to rise. A rise in temperature will mean more polar ice melting and sea levels rising, warns the book. It said that low-lying countries like Bangladesh would be flooded, coastal areas washed away. Not only this, but our climate would be affected. It talked about fertile farmland being turned into barren dust bowls and storms and hurricanes being common, even in Britain. As the world gets hotter, we were told, there will be more droughts in Africa and America, leading to food shortages. And all this in less than 50 years' time. There's no doubt about the causes of climactic changes, the book concludes, and then in italics. It's up to us to do what we can to stop them. This book was published over 30 years ago. So what have we done in the last 30 years to stop global warming and climate change? The answer, I'm afraid, is not nearly enough. Month after month, year after year, the quantity of greenhouse gases being pumped into the atmosphere has increased. And as predicted, global temperatures have risen. Climate change is no longer something that might happen at some time in the distant future. It's something that is happening now. Polar ice is melting fast, and we have seen unprecedented heat waves, droughts, wildfires, storms, and flooding across the world. The scientific evidence has become clearer and clearer. Climate change is happening now, and it's happening because of what we, the human race, are doing to the planet. And because the opportunities to act have largely been missed over the last 30 years, we're now in a race against time, a race not to stop climate change, it's already too late for that, but simply to try to limit the damage that will be caused by it. Many countries and local authorities around the world, including the UK government and Wiltshire County Council, have seemingly recognised the danger and declared a climate emergency. And it's right that they should, because urgent action is needed. The effects of climate change that we're seeing today are the result of a rise in global temperatures since pre-industrial times of about just over 1 degree Celsius. Sounds like nothing, doesn't it? But creation is held in such delicate balance that even seemingly small changes can have a massive effect. In 2015, leading politicians from 197 countries met together in Paris and came to an agreement to try to limit this temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius so as to avoid the worst effects of climate change. However, with the rate of global warming increasing significantly, a recent report by the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, now estimates that the 1.5 degree figure will be reached in less than 20 years' time. Journalists reporting the story described the situation as a race against time, while the report itself calls it a code red for humanity. So, climate change is an emergency. And we all know how to act in an emergency, don't we?
Emergency, which service do you require?
Fire brigade.
Connecting you now.
Hello. this is the fire brigade. How can we help?
Oh, thank goodness. My house has gone up in flames. You must come quickly. It's an emergency.
Well, maybe I'd be the best judge of what's an emergency. After all, I've been a cool handler with the fire brigade for many years. You'd be surprised how many people think it is an emergency when it's not. But now. First things first. When you say home, would that be a house? Or is it a flat? Could it be a bungalow? You know, we like a bungalow because there's no need to climb up the long ladders. You see, they're very popular with us. But if it's a flat, higher than the third floor, then they're going to need to get the turntable ladder over from Swindon.
It's a house, okay?
Okay. So, you've said it's a house. We've got that much straight. Is it? What kind of a house is it? Have we been there? We've done that. Yes.
Sorry.
Yes. I got that wrong. Hold on a minute. Yes. Is it? What kind of a house is it? Is it a detached house, or could it be a semi-detached house, or a terraced house, or a mid-terrace? Could it be a split-level house? Could it be a link-detached house?
Sorry. I don't need an estate agent. I need the fire brigade. It's a semi-detached, number 34, West Haven Gardens.
Ooh, West Haven Gardens, lovely. My Uncle Charlie used to live round the corner from there. I think he was, it was a few rows away, maybe Hereford Road. Do you know it?
Look.
Oh, it's not as nice as West Haven Gardens, mind you.
Look, please come quickly. The fire's spread to the roof now.
Oh, never you mind about that. Fires just look worse than they are. It's all that flame and smoke. It can be quite deceptive. It'll all be fine, I'm sure.
But are they coming? Are they on their way? Have you sent the fire engines yet?
Slight snag there, you see. Well, we really are rather busy. And number one fire engine is round at the old folks' home installing some smoke alarms. And number two fire engine is at the local primary school. Yeah, they're squirting water around and impressing the kiddies no end. I think they're doing a topic on people who help us.
People who help us.
You wouldn't want me to divert the fire engines away from there to you and deprive all the kiddies now, would you?
Yes. Yes, I would. Yes, please. Tell them to come and put the fire out. Please.
Well, I'm not sure. We've got a policy that will let me do that. Let me have a look. Right, diverting a fire engine away from our community interaction event to a fire. No, there's no policy for that. So, what we're going to have to do is set up a working party to thought shower, and we'll come up with some targets to be submitted to our planning and policy committee for ratification. And then if all's well, then we will send that out for consultation to all the interested parties and the stakeholders, and all being well, it will become standard operating practice in the fullness of time, or in due course, if you prefer. How does that sound?
How long's all that going to take?
Well, given goodwill on all sides and everyone pulling together in the face of the possible imminent destruction of your house, and as long as the other agencies are able to meet their targets and cooperate, not willing to prolong things unnecessarily, I'd say, about 3 years.
3 years? My house is on fire now! We need you here now!
There is no need to take that tone with me, madam. We do have a policy on staff abuse and workplace wellbeing, I'll have you know.
Sorry. I'm really sorry. It's just that my house is ablaze.
Yes. I'm sure it'll all turn out all right in the end. Oh, look. Number one fire crew's just come back. Now, was it number 32 or 34 West Haven Gardens?
Doesn't matter now. The house has just collapsed. Don't worry about the house number. If you're still coming, just look for the pile of burning rubble.
Brilliant. Thank you, Bev and Helen, and especially Dave Stranks, who wrote that sketch especially for us this morning. Climate change is an emergency. World leaders agreed that it was when they met in Paris in 2015 and set targets to cut emissions. But although some progress has been made since then, most governments, including our own, are behaving like the call handler in that sketch. UK government is falling well behind with its targets, and some of its decisions are baffling. Why, for example, if there's a climate emergency, is the UK government planning to expand airports, including Heathrow, and embark on an ambitious road building programme? Why are they even contemplating allowing a new oil field to be developed off Shetland? Why didn't they veto plans for a massive new coal mine in Cumbria at an early stage? And why have they raised the rate of VAT on solar panels to 20% while keeping VAT on coal at 5%? It's hard to believe that our leaders really believe that we are facing an emergency. And what about us as a church and as individuals? Are we treating climate change as an emergency, really? A couple of years ago, I saw a vox pop on the news where a man was asked if he was worried about climate change. "Not really," he replied casually. "I wouldn't mind it being a bit warmer." With all the coverage that there's been since then on television, radio and the newspapers, I hope that none of us here are as ignorant as that. But how much do we know about climate change and the threat that it poses? And has that knowledge prompted us to make significant changes to our behaviour? The last time I spoke about climate change at a harvest service, a woman accosted me afterwards and told me in no uncertain terms that I should go and preach in China. She clearly saw no point in making changes in her life while that country continued to open new coal mines and burn so much fossil fuel. Are we really going to abdicate responsibility that easily? Surely we're called to be salt and light in the world. God has given us an amazing planet that he created and has entrusted us to look after. And surely as Christians, we have a special responsibility to set an example, to be in the forefront of the fight against climate change, both as individuals and as a church. It's natural to feel helpless in the face of such an overwhelming global crisis, but there are things we can do. Those who can afford it can make some big changes to reduce their carbon footprint, like installing solar panels or buying an electric car or replacing old gas boilers with air or ground source heat pumps. But even if we can't afford to do those things, we can make simple changes in the way that we live. We can cut out unnecessary car journeys and make more use of public transport. We can cycle or walk more. We can make sure that our homes are well insulated. We can switch to LED light bulbs. We can eat less red meat and buy more local produce. We can be careful not to waste food. We can buy fewer clothes and less stuff in general. As a song we sang earlier puts it, we can be content with the things that we need. There's plenty of information available on the internet and elsewhere about how we can live more sustainable lives. So we can be lights to the world and set an example for others to follow. But while reducing our own carbon footprint is important on its own, it's not enough to stop global warming and climate change. To do that, we need to influence the people who make the crucial decisions, the politicians and big business. As God's people who care about preserving his creation, we need to hold our politicians to account. We need to educate ourselves about environmental issues, and we need to make our voices heard. For example, by signing petitions, writing letters to the newspapers, emailing our MPs, attending rallies. We can campaign against local plans that are bad for the environment. The climate emergency demands firm, fast, and decisive action. But democratic governments are reluctant to take such action. They won't make necessary but unpopular decisions for fear of upsetting the voters, big business, or their financial backers. This is a weakness of the democratic system. But the strength of the democratic system is that politicians will listen if enough people raise their voices on a particular issue. They want our votes. And big companies want our custom. They will listen too if enough people make a fuss and take action. So we can make them listen by switching to energy companies that get their electricity only from renewable sources. We can switch to a bank that doesn't invest in the exploration and extraction of fossil fuels. We can invest our savings in ethical accounts. We need to impress upon politicians and business leaders that they're not making long-term plans for home improvements. The house is on fire, and they need to act quickly. Another thing we can do is to pray. We can pray for the world leaders meeting at the COP26 climate conference in November, and we can pray for our government as we hold them to account for any promises that they make there. I remember preaching a sermon here at an evening service just before the first lockdown. It centred around Jeremiah's visit to the potter's house. Through Jeremiah, God warns the people of Israel of dire consequences if they don't change their ways. But his message wasn't all gloom and doom. There was hope in it too. The Israelites could avoid the impending disaster if they changed their ways. And the message to the human race from the climate scientists is the same. The situation we're facing is serious, but it's not beyond hope. If we take the situation seriously and act fast, we can stop the most damaging effects of climate change. God has given us the means with which to fight climate change. He's provided us with trees and other green plants that absorb carbon dioxide and produce oxygen. And he's allowed us to develop new technologies. Technologies, for example, that allow us to replace polluting petrol vehicles with clean electric ones. And he's given us a new harvest to gather in, a harvest of energy from the sun, from the wind, from the tides, and from the heat at the Earth's core. Working with God, we can achieve great things. Remember those issues that we were so worried about 30 years ago? Acid rain is no longer such a pressing problem, since environmentals have been put in place to control it. Just a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that the world is finally completely free of leaded petrol. And that hole in the ozone layer? The hole has shrunk and is expected to heal completely by 2050. God's creation has remarkable powers to heal itself. But this didn't happen by us sitting back and doing nothing. We did our part by abandoning the use of CFCs in aerosol cans, and God did his. God has given us the responsibility of looking after our world. He's given us the knowledge that we are destroying it, and he's given us the means to stop the destruction. Now is the time to act. As we have done for thousands of years, we need to work in partnership with him to ensure that future generations have a harvest too. May God bless us and guide us as we seek to protect and save the beautiful world that he has created. Amen.